Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm Alan Cardoza and flying solo today. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon, Pacific Daylight Time right now, we will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, as I'm sure some of you may have expected to hear Marvin's voice with me this morning, we're reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not here on the air. So we get calls on weekends and in the middle of the night and have to respond quickly. Now, be it locating a runaway or escorting a teen to a specialized program, Marvin's willingness to help is always there, which is something I appreciate so much about him. Now, today, I'm looking forward to our topic because we're going to be talking about addressing the health and well-being of the parents of children with autism. Now, our guest today, Dr. Darren Susch, is a well-recognized licensed clinical psychologist and board-certified behavior analyst in Los Angeles, California, that provides psychotherapy to parents and caretakers of children with autism. Now, his practice is one of very few that addresses the mental health of parents of children with autism. Now, over the past decade, Dr. Susch has worked within agencies that provide intervention and support for children diagnosed with autism. Now, through his work developing treatment programs, meeting with families, and helping children, he has gained exceptional knowledge and understanding of the unique experiences of parents of children with autism. So, Dr. Susch, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really glad to have you on. And as we were just talking before we went on the air, I happened to be reading the newspaper, and there was a great article where you were talking. I thought, in a very in-depth fashion of what parents can do to sort of ward off the anxieties and the things that they may be going through if they are the parent of a child with autism. So with this being, being April and being National Autism Awareness Month, share with us a little bit about what autism is and what it is not.
Sure. Well, the one thing that is great about this time of year is that we do get to have more of these discussions about exactly what is autism, what does it mean for someone to be diagnosed with autism, and then what's the impact on the family and society. So that's a great question about what exactly is autism. Technically, autism is what's known as a neurodevelopmental disorder, and it's characterized by a couple different characteristics and a couple different deficits. So typically, autism is diagnosed within children, and we usually see these things around 2 years old, although there are some signs that have been identified much earlier, and unfortunately, a lot of diagnoses actually come into the fray later. So even though these signs are noticed earlier, we're not diagnosing until a little bit later. So the things that we look for would be deficits or difficulties in social communication. So what that means is not really having that back and forth communication, whether that be verbal communication or nonverbal communication. Not having that social interaction, so difficulties in social interaction. So either a lack of maintaining social relationships, a lack of interest in initiating social relationships, or difficulty within that social aspect of play and peer interaction.
What would be some examples, again, because we're talking about, two to 3 years old, what would be some of the things, the little red flags that pop up for a parent?
Sure. So some things to look for would be a child maybe not initiating with a peer or initiating an interaction with their parent. Lack of eye contact is always one that pediatricians may look for or psychologists may look for, although that doesn't necessarily say, oh, if my kid's not making eye contact with me, 100% they meet diagnosis for autism. But it's a warning sign that it should at least be looked at. Not pointing to things or not following a parent or a peer's point to go and access items. So that's where we start to see that that social interaction or that social communication, those difficulties in those kids.
Wow. Now, let's talk a little bit about, you know, as far as your practice, because now as a parent, as they start to see these things, you know, obviously they need to get the child in to get them diagnosed. But I think one of the things, too, that may have been missed in the past quite a bit is, you know, what do the parents need to know and what does your practice provide as far as therapy for those parents so that they can best handle what is now going to be their future?
Sure. So what autism used to be referred to as a pervasive developmental disorder. So basically what that meant was that pervasive aspect meant that these were deficits or difficulties or challenges that would be seen throughout the child's lifetime, which may be helped and will likely be helped with therapy and with education, but also across a number of different areas. So just as autism is a pervasive developmental disorder for the individual with the diagnosis, it really is also pervasive in the family, which means that autism doesn't just affect the one person, but it affects the entire family. Individuals with autism have communication difficulties, which can be extremely frustrating for a child trying to let someone know exactly what they want or what they need. Sometimes that results in behavioral problems or challenges, tantrums, crying, hitting, not always, but sometimes when we're not able to express what we want, we revert to whatever we can do to get our needs met. So that's really stressful for the kid, and you can imagine it's really stressful for the parents as well, not being able to know what your kid wants.
Well, yeah, and I could see how if a parent doesn't recognize this right away and doesn't, you know, doesn't go to someone to find out how they can better handle it, you know, wouldn't that be something that can actually take the child more towards some of those behavioral problems because the parent doesn't really know how to deal with it, so the child acts out in a bigger and bigger fashion to get what they want? Does that kind of make sense?
Exactly. I'm a parent myself, and I know that on days when I wake up and I just, quote, wake up on the wrong side of the bed and maybe I'm not in the best of moods, it's a lot more difficult for me to respond to my kid. And sometimes I'm a little bit more short-tempered than I should be on days when I'm more stressed out. So magnitude that exponentially with a parent of a child with autism, where you're already stressed, you're already under a lot of different pressures from a number of different sources, and you have these other difficulties to contend with.
Now, I mean, it would seem to me that most any parent, you know, with a child with autism, you know, should probably get into some form of therapy. But for those that maybe don't see it that way, you know, how can a parent, you know, of a child with autism tell that, you know, based on what's going on, that maybe they really do need to get in and get some therapy?
Sure. So there are definitely some telltale signs that you may potentially benefit from therapy. Of course, as a psychologist, I'm very biased because I think that everyone can benefit from therapy because I think that there's always something that can be supported, that can be worked on, and that can be helped. But I really do think this is especially true for parents of children with autism because all those stresses of everyday life are that much more heightened because of the conditions that these parents and these families face. So some warning signs to look for, which are general warning signs for everyone, but are especially true for parents of children with autism, are if your if you're not finding the things that you used to find enjoyable, enjoyable anymore. So you used to love chatting with friends, you used to love doing these things with your wife or your husband or your significant other, and you just don't feel like doing these things anymore. You're just not finding them fun, or you just don't have the motivation to even try. That could be a warning sign that, that something's wrong or something's off, and maybe getting support or getting help might be beneficial for you.
Sure.
If you're finding more stress in your relationships, if people from work or people from home are coming up into you and saying, hey, you know what, you've just been seem off. Something seems, are you okay? Is everything going all right? That might be time to say that, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have this giant problem that you need to be fixed, but maybe getting support and getting help for yourself may help to benefit in those areas. If you're getting physical symptoms, a lot of times stress can affect our body in that we just, our appetite is off, our sleep is off, we feel sick, we just don't feel well. These are signs that it might be beneficial to go and get support for yourself.
Right, and that makes sense too, because I think so many people don't realize that, you know, you may think you have it together, but when your body starts breaking down, that, you know, that actually is a message coming from the brain. It's just mm-hmm. it's being acted out somewhere else within your own body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the telltale signs for depression, or one of the things that we look for depression and anxiety, are significant changes in weight and significant changes in sleep. But one thing to make note of is, for parents of children with autism, this is the norm. Not being able to sleep might just be the way things are, or not being able to grab a bite to eat might just be the new normal. But that also doesn't necessarily mean that you have to deal with that on your own, or you have to manage that on your own, especially if you're noticing this becoming much worse than normal.
Right. Now, what about just difficulty in concentrating? I think that we get that from parents at times when we're talking to them, you know, in regards to their child, and they seem to be fading off from a concentration standpoint, you know, to where it's sometimes hard to get them to focus.
Sure. When you're not feeling your best mentally, of course, it's much more difficult to concentrate. You may find your mind feeling scattered, or you might feel restless, or you might feel that you're just wandering without any direction. So this is definitely a sign that you may be under additional or undue stress. Again, for parents of kids with autism, this is kind of the norm, because you do have to do a number of different things at one time. It's the multitasking. So feeling a little scattered, or feeling like you have a thousand different things to do and not being able to focus on that, is fairly typical in parents of kids with special needs and autism. But it's when this becomes too overwhelming, or so overwhelming, that there may be a problem that may be affecting you and may be affecting your family, and support may be beneficial.
Now, and how prevalent is it in these situations with the parents that a lot of what they're going through is sort of a feeling of guilt, that they're somehow blaming themselves for this?
I think guilt is a pretty strong emotion for parents of kids with autism. I do think it does affect each family differently. Just like each kid who is diagnosed with autism might have a completely different presentation, I think each family will also have a completely different presentation. But guilt is very common. Guilt for, why did this happen to my child? What could I have done differently? To guilt for, what should I be doing to help my child? As far as, am I doing everything that I can to help my child? And then also, when parents start to consider getting help for themselves, there's the guilt of, is this time spent on myself being selfish, or should I be spending this time that I'm seeing a psychologist doing something with my kid? But I really do feel that getting the help for yourself is the way to help your family. The oxygen mask is a great example when we're on the airplane. Before,
right,
they always say that in order to take care of your family, put the oxygen mask on yourself and then put it on your children, because you need to be able to be awake to help your child in those situations.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. And yeah, I think in so many cases, the anxiety and the pressures and everything else, and something I didn't think of but you brought up, which is a great point, is that the guilt of not doing something for yourself, because it's going to take away that that 1 hour or 2 hours a week or whatever it may be that you could be focusing on this child in need. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's an excellent analogy. Now, one of the things, again, that we run into a lot in talking with parents, you know, is, you know, the cost either in actual time, in time or in money. You know, I think we all know that, the therapy, how do you deal with that with parents when the parent says, well, you know, I don't know that I can manage the time, or I don't know that I can manage the expense. You know, what are some suggestions that the parents can do to balance that out in such a way that they're doing what's best for the whole family?
Well, I think that's an excellent point, because cost is such a big issue. And whether we're talking about cost from a financial perspective, the American Society, Autism Society of America, recently came out with a statistic that each individual with autism costs a family an additional, I believe, $17,000 per year in just making sure that supports are necessary and resources are available. So the cost of autism is fairly significant, not to mention the time commitment in making sure that your child has every resource available to them, every support available to them, so that they can develop the skills that they would have the potential to develop and live a more independent life. So cost and time is a big issue. And a lot of parents, like I mentioned, do feel worried or guilty about taking some of that cost or taking some of that time to work on themselves or to help themselves. But a family is a unit, and every person within that family needs to be supported, whether that be the child who has a diagnosis or the parents who are working on their own issues or helping the rest of the family. So it is important to take that time for yourself, not as a selfish act, but as an act for your family. So some families will take turns. So they'll have if both parents are going to be coming in, they may take turns. So one parent comes 1 week or one point in the week, and another parent comes another point of the week. Having outside family to support or watch the children is great, because then parents can come in and they can know and feel comfortable that their children are with safe and comfortable people. So these are some options that are available, but again, each parent and each family is unique.
Right. Now, an area that I don't know much about, but it has to do with assistance, and you know, my guess is that there's probably some form of financial assistance in regards to to helping with that child. Is there a form does that assistance extend for some families to working with the parents, which puts them in a better position to be able to better take care of that child?
It does. It definitely depends on the funding sources that are available and what the parents have available to them. So we've definitely made great strides, especially within the last 10 or so years, in making sure that financial supports are available for treatment for children who have been diagnosed with autism. We have a ridiculous way to go, because we're definitely not meeting the need in the way that we should, but things are at least getting slightly better in that now there's more funding sources available, whether that be regional centers or insurance or other sources. But within that, there's not necessarily always a component built in to support parents of children with autism. My office does take insurance, but again, parents would need to be covered for that type of insurance, or I would work out of network with them.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I think in this day and age, that's a huge, a huge benefit if we can get it set up in such a way that, you know, that there can be some sort of, you know, financial support. So now, you know, one of the comments that you probably run into, and I'm curious as to how you deal with it, but, you know, what do you say to those parents that say, well, my child needs help, not me?
Yeah, I definitely get that a lot. It's probably one of the most common questions, because the child is the person who's receiving the diagnosis, and the child is the person who's the focus of the majority of the services. And that's for a very good reason, because we want to help and support these kids in living as independent and full of life as possible. But that being said, parents are, this is going to sound silly to say, but parents are a very large part of their kids' lives.
Sure.
Probably the biggest part of kids' lives. So we need to make sure that the parents are supported, not only for them, if anything, so they can support their kids, but also for themselves.
Yeah. You know, and I think that if they could take that view, you know, it may take away from a little bit of the stigma. You know, and do you run into that? Is there still a little bit of a stigma, even when it's really, you know, just something to help them, you know, be able to better take care of their own child?
Definitely. And unfortunately, this is just widespread within this country, is that the stigma of mental illness or the stigma of participating in therapy is very widespread. I think some statistics came out this year or last year that only about 46% of people actually receive treatment, mental health treatment, although one in five Americans actually can meet qualifications for a mental illness. So by no means are we meeting this mental health need within the country. I think this is especially true within the autism community, and especially true within the parents of kids with autism community, in fact, that they are not feeling like as if they're not able to access these resources, whether that be about time or the guilt of getting support for themselves instead of spending that hour, that time with their kids.
Well, now, and you know, I think again, and fortunately for us, many of our listeners are people who do work in the fields, in mental health fields, or are teachers or people that are out there helping. How would you suggest that a family member, a friend, a practitioner, or somebody working within the field, how can they best suggest therapeutic services to the parents of children with autism without maybe the parents taking offense?
Sure. And I think, it goes back to that stigma, because that stigma prevents a lot of people from seeking therapy on their own, but I think it also prevents people from suggesting to their loved ones that this might be something that could be helpful for you, or have you ever considered getting help for yourself? It seems like you might benefit from it. So I think it is important that we not only take care of ourselves, but that we try to take care of our loved ones and make sure that they're receiving the support that they need. So letting them know that by suggesting that they might benefit from therapeutic services or from support, that doesn't mean that they're doing anything wrong. In fact, it means they're doing a lot of things right, but by therapy, they might be able to acknowledge better all those things that they are doing right. A lot of times when we're feeling stressed, we're feeling depressed, we're not seeing all these good things that are happening. We're not seeing all the great accomplishments that we're doing. And for parents of kids with autism, we're not seeing all the great accomplishments that our kids are making, because we're just not in that positive mindset. So by seeking help and seeking therapy and seeking support, we're able to focus more on all these great things that are happening and then get support for some of the things that might be more difficult.
Now, speaking of support, now, are there support groups? Because I think that there may be parents who would feel a little bit more comfortable, you know, if they thought they were going to a support group with other parents, not to mention the fact that would obviously be, helpful as well.
Yeah, there's a number of support groups out there, and I definitely would suggest doing a search for support groups that are available in your area. The support groups are great because they do provide that catharsis. So sharing your stories with other people, and then also hearing the difficulties of others who are in similar situations, so you don't feel like you're alone, and the accomplishments of others who are in those similar situations. So it gives you a sense of hope, or even some great strategies for getting through the things that your family is facing. I always say that there's not necessarily a right or a wrong way for getting the help or the support that you need, whether that be going to a support group, whether that be going to a support group specifically for parents of children with special needs, going and seeing someone from the clergy, going and seeing a social worker, a therapist, or going and seeing a psychologist. So whatever support will work for you and your family, that is what's important. But for parents of kids with autism, I do think it would be even more beneficial if the support group that you go to, if the psychologist or therapist that you see has knowledge and experience of the world of autism and special needs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, for everybody out there listening, if you want to follow along with us, you can go to the website. It is www.drdarrensush.com. That's drdarrensush.com. You can follow along with us. Now, obviously, if you're driving, don't try to do this. But for those sitting at your computer, you can open up another window. You can follow along. We're going to take a break right now. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking about therapy for parents of children with autism. So being able to get the tools that you need so that you can be the very best you can be in helping your child. Now, our guest is Dr. Darren Sush, and Darren, we have a listener question that is coming in, and again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time either to instant message something like this, send us an email, or even call, and we'll do everything we can to get to these. This one reads, my nephew has a 4-year-old autistic son. His situation is causing so much stress on his marriage. And it says, you know, my sister is also very distressed over the situation. The financial pressures alone seem overwhelming. My sister and I will both be listening to the show today as we are anxious to learn of any resources or suggestions that we might be able to get that would be helpful in dealing with this 4-year-old boy.
So that's a great question, and it's certainly a common question, especially looking for what can be done to help this child. And that is where our focus should be. Our focus should be on making sure that these kids who are diagnosed with autism or have these qualities that meet a diagnosis of autism are being helped in every way possible. So helping them to communicate in their wants and needs more effectively, helping them to feel more secure and more safe in their own bodies. And we've made a lot of progress in making sure that these resources are available. We still have a long way to go, but we've definitely made progress in these areas and making sure that treatment sources are available. There's different avenues for funding that I would definitely suggest to explore, whether that be, again, through the regional center or through insurance agencies. And they'll be very helpful in, number one, diagnosing or ruling out the condition of autism, and then also providing access to what supports and what services are available. But again, this is talking about what can we do to help the child, and I think that one of the main things that we can do to help these kids is also make sure that as parents, we're also taken care of.
Well, and again, I was going to touch on that too, because to me the interesting part about this question, you know, is that what they're saying is that the situation is causing stress in the marriage of the parents of this 4-year-old, but then it's also saying that there's distress in this person's sister, which then would be the grandmother of the child. You know, so we have multi-generational pressure. It also talks about the financial pressure becoming overwhelming. So yes, I think this really does go right into the services that you're providing, which is how can we now this is affecting, as I can see it, at least, you know, there's three different families, you know, that are all focused on this one thing, helping this four-year-old. But at the same time, it seems like it's really taking its toll.
Exactly. And as I mentioned before, it's definitely a pervasive condition in that it pervades through the entire family. So whether that be mom, dad, brother, sister, grandma, grandpa, whatever it is, this is something that affects the whole family.
Now, you know, what should a parent or in this case, a grandparent or an aunt or whatever, what should they look for in a therapist, you know, that's going to be able to help the whole family?
Well, again, the resources that we talked about before the break are really what my suggestion would be. So, So finding a support group can be extremely helpful, especially a support group that focuses on the needs of special needs families. And then again, finding a therapist or a psychologist that has knowledge and experience working within the field of autism, or knowledge and experience within with the diagnosis or the behaviors that relate to autism. The difficulties in securing funding, the negotiation between funding sources, the discussions with special needs schools or teachers, working with understanding how to work with advocates and special needs lawyers. So finding a therapist that at least has an understanding or a knowledge of these areas that parents of kids with autism face every day, I think would be extremely helpful in making sure that the support is there and focused on the actual needs of the parents.
Yeah, see, I think that's great. You mentioned in regards to, you know, the advocates, you know, that are helping. So are you in a position then to where you're working kind of with the advocate so that there's sort of this team now that's trying to help the child and the family as a whole unit?
Well, the one nice thing about having an advocate available to you is that they're able to do a lot of the negotiation aspect with you and with whoever it is that you're in discussions with. And they're also very knowledgeable about the laws and the regulations that are there to protect your family and to protect your child. So I do work with advocates in that our focus is on making sure that support is available for families and that our support is there for the child. And I think that's a well-rounded issue. So making sure that the kid has the support and the services that they need, and also making sure that the parents are in a state of mind or having the well-being available to them to then support themselves and support their child.
Now, for some of the parents that are listening that aren't aware of some of these options that are out there for them, what is the best way for them to be able to learn about that? Or is there a number or do you want them to go to your site as far as to get a hold of you so that you can maybe share with them some of these areas that could help them?
Yeah, they can definitely get in touch with me. They can send me an email at info at Dr. Darren Sush, and that's S-U-S-H. I always say like sushi without the I, .com. And they can get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to refer them to resources that have been made available to me and that I've had good relationships with and I've found to be supportive for families, whether that be resources outside of actual therapy. And then there's a number of different sites and services out there. So the Autism Society of America has a very comprehensive list, and they do that by state too. So if you want to look more in your specific area, Autism Speaks has information available to point parents in certain directions. LA Feet in LA, that's a parent support group run by parents, and they have a lot of great resources available for not only treatment agencies but advocates and lawyers. And so they're a really great resource to just access a broader avenue of people that can be there for the family.
All right. Now, if a parent really isn't ready, you know, for therapy, or they believe that they aren't ready, what would be some tips or things that they can start doing for themselves as they start into this process? I know you've just touched on some, but you know, some of the other things that they can really do that, you know, that's more hands-on with their child.
Sure. So again, the first thing I always say is being there for yourself is being there for your family and being there for your child. So making sure that you are well supported is the first step in making sure that you're taking care of everyone else. So again, going back to that oxygen mask example, you need to be able to breathe so that you can breathe for your family. Mm-hmm. So finding support, whether that be through therapy, particularly a psychologist or therapist who's knowledgeable in autism, that's my first and foremost tip. Or support through family and loved ones. Everyone's experiences are their own, and no one can really walk in your shoes, but that doesn't mean you are alone. So finding support, whether that be to other families who are impacted by autism, family, your own family or friends, even if that discussion has absolutely nothing to do with autism or nothing to do with communication challenges, nothing to do with IEPs, just having someone available to talk to can be a very, very big help for parents of children with autism. I also suggest that parents keep a journal. And now, I've said this before, and whenever I say keep a journal, I get the side eye from many parents, because a lot of parents are saying, you know, I don't have time to keep a journal. This isn't something that I'm going to be able to do. But a journal doesn't have to be this professional, written with calligraphy, really, really fancy note of your everyday life, but just something that can help them to keep a record of all those things that are going on for them. So whether that be the challenging days that they can then look back and realize that they got through, or the successes that they want to make sure they don't forget, or even just something to get all those things that are going on in your head out of your head and onto paper so you don't have to think about them anymore, the journal can be really helpful with that.
Okay. And what would be some other things as far as, and I know that in reading the article that you did in the Times, and you talked a lot about you know making sure that they differentiate as to, you know, what you can and cannot control, you know, and in regards to setting goals, you know, not only for the child but setting goals for yourself, and I thought those were really great points as well.
Yeah. It's really difficult to see the things and observe the things that are outside of your actual control. And because of that, it does lead to a lot of sadness, a lot of worry, and feelings of depression and loneliness. So being able to take that step back and look at those things that you can control and take action with them, and look at those things that you can't control and be able to see what you actually can do with them, that can be extremely helpful for parents and for families.
That sounds great. Now, there was another question that came in as far as an instant message, and again, we thank those for sending them in. And this one, I think you may have already touched on it, but maybe they didn't hear that part. But it says, I have a 2-year-old child, and I am starting to think that they may have autism. I'm concerned as to what I should do and who I should see in regards to having this checked out. So this just came over as an instant message, and they may not have been listening in the very beginning. Can you touch on that again for this listener?
Sure. So that actually reminds me of a question that I get asked a lot. People ask me a lot, you know, what's the age of the clients that you see? Again, kind of forgetting that I don't actually work with the kids. I work with the parents. But I think that's a really valid question, because a lot of people would imagine that most of the parents who want or seek or need therapeutic services are the parents of the very young kids, or the parents of the kids who have just been diagnosed. And I've really found that it's really much more of a long-term or longitudinal issue that's really different for each family. So one family might want support or feel more stress or feel the need to get services before a diagnosis even happens. So they're noticing some of these signs and symptoms in their kids, and they're very stressed out about it, or they're concerned and they don't know what to do. So at that time, that person may feel they would benefit from therapeutic services for themselves. And then we're talking about a diagnosis actually comes through, so the child gets the diagnosis. Some parents actually feel relief when this happens because at least they have a name to what's been going on, and then they can go and make sure that they're doing everything they can to support their child. And then talking about social and all the social issues that come up in the toddler years, and going into, and then moving up and going into school, and then relationships with other, with older kids and with siblings, and even going on to empty nest syndrome, or what happens now that my kid is older, or now that I'm getting older. I've had parents come and talk to me and say, you know what, before when my child was younger, I didn't have time for anything else, and I just needed to focus on my kid. And even though I knew I needed help, it wasn't an area I could go with at that time. But now that he's older and things are going much better for him, I feel like now it's time to work on me. So when I get asked that question of what age do people come in, I always say all over the place.
Yeah,
because it's really based on the needs of the parent. But to go back to the question that came in of this young child who's showing signs or potentially showing signs and symptoms that are concerning, I would definitely suggest first and foremost most parents will take their children to their pediatrician. A lot of this happens during the typical well baby checkups where a developmental screening typically occurs. So making sure that these developmental milestones, pointing, standing up, babbling, are taking place around their time that they should. I always put a cautionary statement there in that every kid's different.
Right.
So just because your child is a little bit slower meeting a developmental milestone or hasn't started walking right when, you know, your neighbor's kid started walking, that doesn't mean that there's something wrong. It just might mean that your kid started walking a little bit later. Uh-huh. But it is good to consult with your pediatrician and just get some of those questions answered. There was a couple studies that came out recently, one saying that some pediatricians are missing some of these signs in the typical well baby checkup because they're just too short, and then some pediatricians aren't listening to these parents' concerns when they're bringing it up, and which is leading to later diagnosis. So I do suggest that parents really be advocates for themselves and advocates for their kids in taking notes on the things that they're seeing and the concerns that they have.
That makes good sense. Now, you mentioned in regards to, like, the empty nest. Now, depending on the severity of the autism, that could be quite a different age range. And so it seems to me, when you're talking about the potential of what age your clients would be, being the parents, you know, this could be something even after, you know, that child is now an adult themselves and mm-hmm. being able to deal with the stressors that come with now having an autistic adult in your family.
Sure. And I think it's, again, going back to that every person is different, just like every person with autism is different, and every family impacted with autism is going to be different. So there's definitely kids who meet the diagnosis with autism who, through help and through support and through education and through therapy, will show tremendous progress and we'll be able to do amazing things, and we see this all the time. And then there's kids who may, even with all that support, may still have difficulties and may need support throughout their life, and may need parent support throughout their life. So empty nest syndrome may not necessarily come for a lot of parents of children with autism because they always will be involved in the lives of their kids with autism.
That's at some level.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
So again, I think that is a stress that many parents do feel as far as, okay, what's going to happen with my child when I'm no longer able to provide them that support.
Yeah, you read my mind, and I was just going to say that, you know, what happens, yeah, at that point to where, you know, you now have somebody who is getting to that age that they don't feel that they're able to provide what they need, or to that age in which many of us would now be starting to take care of our parents. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that when they get to that level from a therapeutic standpoint?
Well, one of my tips, and I think it falls right in here, is that education is power. So you're never going to learn everything about autism. You're just not. There's just too much information out there, and there's new information coming through every day. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation too. But educating yourself on what resources are available for older adults with autism, and setting those up as early as possible, is definitely helpful for parents of children with autism. There's a lot of new work being done now in trying to make sure that these supports are available for kids who then become adults with autism, because there hasn't been a lot of resources. There hasn't been a giant focus before. But all these kids that we're talking about, they're going to grow up. So we want to make sure that we are supporting them and providing them with every opportunity that they're entitled to when they're adults. And what that also means, those opportunities are opportunities for their parents to get the support that the parents need.
Now, when you mentioned in regards to new information that's coming out, and it reminded me that one of the things that I had read was that we're now in a time in which, I guess, 1 in 68 children, mm-hmm. may have autism. Is that correct? And if so, which direction are we going?
Well, that's the latest statistics that have come out from the CDC, mm-hmm. is that 1 in 68 kids meet a diagnosis of autism. And the CDC's projection is that number is going to get larger, which basically means that 1 in a lower number.
More
kids are going to be diagnosed with autism as we continue.
Is there any research or whatever as to why we're going in that direction?
There is a lot. Unfortunately, the information related to the causes and the risk factors associated with autism is not definitive. So they don't have a definite, this is what's going on answer, or this is what the risk factors are. But there is work being done in trying to get those answers so we can understand more of causation, or at the very least understand more of what treatment options would be best for these individuals.
Now, is there anything on the horizon that people are looking to that suggests that this is something that will allow us to turn this around and to start either people who are already diagnosed with it able to I don't know what the right word would be, but to have fewer symptoms, or something to where fewer people will be being diagnosed with it in the future?
Well, I think one of the things that comes with more people being diagnosed with any condition, but more people specifically being diagnosed with autism, is that we start to learn more about what treatment options are available. And then we start to get better at what treatment options are most effective. So that's where a lot of the research is, in what treatment or teaching strategies or helpful supportive strategies are most effective for children or individuals who have difficulties associated with autism, but also taking into account that each person is an individual, so making sure that we can structure these strategies based on the needs of that particular person. One thing that is also interesting is that, especially with the age of social media, we have more access to self-advocates or adults with autism, and they're able to give us information about what was helpful for them, what was not helpful for them. Of course, these are each individual cases, but it does let us know what are helpful strategies in helping some of the younger kids.
Right, and that goes to right what you were saying, which is information, being power.
Right.
So I think that's great. Now, one of the things that I love to discuss as we get towards the close of the show is if you could please share with us one of your favorite success stories.
Well, I think the idea of success in therapy, not just for parents of children with autism, is relative.
Sure.
And I think that going into it with that idea or that framework or frame of mind is therapeutic in and of itself. So comparing yourself to other people is not always the most helpful strategy. But finding success may be that, yes, I'm still stressed, or yes, I still live a stressful life, but at least I understand what makes me feel stressed. Or at least I understand when I'm stressed, what I can do to help myself, or what I can do to make sure that this stress doesn't steamroll out of control. Or success for another individual may be, you know what, I'm starting to notice that I'm feeling more distraught than I typically am, so now I'm going to go seek help. And that can be success for somebody, is the acknowledgement that help can be helpful. So that's why I always say that success or recovery or of each person or each family.
Okay, fair enough. Well, again, I thank you so much for coming on. Unfortunately, we have just run out of time. Again, for anybody out there, please feel free to go to the doctor's website. And again, that's Dr. Darren Susch. That's DarrenSusch.com. You can get in contact with them by going to the website. Thank you so much, Darren, for coming on, and thank you for what you're doing to help families in need.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. And for everybody else out there, be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.